It's Thursday, the 21st of November, 2024, and you're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader and Flagstaff, Chuck Kaufman, bringing you news of interest to our veterans community here in Arizona. Today we have news from our military news website, stripes.com, military.com, and others, as well as our veteran service organizations and the Veterans Administration. We'll start today with an item from stripes.com. Air Force Silver Star recipients among those honored for repulsing Iranian missile and drone attack. This is from the 15th of November by Loretto Morris of Stars and Stripes, RAF Lakenheath, England. An Air Force officer who became the third woman to be awarded a Silver Star since World War II is among 30 service members recognized this week for battling a barrage of Iranian missiles and drones during an unprecedented retaliatory attack against Israel earlier this year. Captain Lacey Hester, a weapons systems officer, was awarded the third highest military decoration for valor in combat at a ceremony Tuesday at RAF Lakenheath in England. Major Benjamin Coffey, the pilot of the two-seater F-15E, received the citation alongside Hester. More than 150 people attended the ceremony to honor the awardees, which included ground crew members who kept the pilots in the fight during the April 13th and 14th Iranian attacks. Hester and Coffey were part of a coalition air mission that countered an Iranian launch of more than 300 ballistic and cruise missiles, as well as one-way attack drones. During their first flight, the pair intercepted six drones flying in the dark at low altitude, the Air Force said. The fighter was forced to return to an undisclosed base in the Middle East because of a missile that couldn't fire. Coffey and Hester took cover in a nearby bunker in anticipation of a possible attack on the base. After learning that a replacement F-15 was ready and as overhead explosions from missile intercepts rang out, they left the bunker for a second flight. During both flights, the pair fired all available weapons. Hester also directed fighter jets in the area through the end of the Iranian attack, the officials said. Despite the risks, they remained focused on completing their mission and returning to safety. Lieutenant Colonel Timothy Diesel Kazi, commander of the 494th Fighter Squadron, said Tuesday, "It was just this beautiful symphony of execution," Kazi said. Kazi was one of six people who received the Distinguished Flying Cross with Valor. In all, 14 officers earned the Distinguished Flying Cross in some form. It acknowledges the recipient's heroism or extraordinary achievement while participating in a flight. Six people, ranging from Airman First Class to Staff Sergeant, received the Air and Space Achievement Medal, while six others earned Commendation Medals. Major Clayton Wicks and Master Sergeant Timothy Adams were awarded Bronze Stars for their efforts, which included directing maintenance, refueling, and reloading operations for a dozen F-15s over 7 hours while under threat from the Iranian assault. General James Hecker, U.S. Air Force's Europe and Africa commander, praised the award recipients and the collective efforts of the 48th Fighter Wing, known as the Panthers. "You never know when your time is going to come, but when your time comes, you need to be ready," Hecker said. "I'm happy to say the Panthers were ready." In all, seven women have received a Silver Star, and Hester is the first in the Air Force. Three others received the Citation Star, a predecessor of the current medal. PFC Monica Lynn Brown received the Silver Star for treating wounded soldiers while under intense small arms and mortar fire in April 2007 in Afghanistan. Then, Sergeant Lee Ann Hester, who is not related to Captain Lacey Hester, was awarded the medal for her actions during a March 2005 enemy ambush on a supply convoy near the town of Salman Pak, Iraq. She was the first woman to receive the citation since World War II. And that was Air Force Silver Star recipients among those honored for repulsing Iranian missile and drone attack. Next, from Stars and Stripes, we have an article by Matthew Adams, "Military Suicides Increase Among Active Duty and Reserve Troops in 2023. Washington. The suicide rate among active duty and reserve troops increased in 2023 after the military saw an overall decrease the previous year, according to an annual report released Thursday by the Pentagon. The Pentagon reported an active duty suicide rate of about 28 suicide deaths for every 100,000 service members last year, a 12% increase from 2022. This increase is not statistically significant, said Liz Clark, the director of the Pentagon's Defense Suicide Prevention Office. The report states, not statistically significant means that there is low confidence this is a true difference. The rate is calculated based on an active duty force of about 1.28 million troops, about 330,000 in the reserve, and nearly 430,000 in the National Guard. For years, the Pentagon has struggled to bring down the number of suicides in the ranks. The Defense Department began collecting and reporting quarterly surveillance data on service member suicides in 2018 to help guide prevention efforts. Overall, there were 523 reported suicides in 2023 compared with 493 in 2022. The number of active duty troops who died by suicide increased from 363 from 331. The Air Force, Army, and Navy all saw an increase in suicide rates, while the Marine Corps stayed about the same. The suicide rate among reserve troops increased 8%, while the National Guard rate decreased by about 5%, according to the report. Similar to previous years, service members who died by suicide were largely young males under the age of 30. This group accounted for 61% of suicide deaths in the active component, Clark said. Since 2011, suicide rates have increased among active duty troops but remained relatively stable for the Reserve and National Guard troops, according to the report. The Defense Department in recent years has aimed to improve mental health care access for troops amid increases in suicide rates and outcry from members of Congress and others. In 2022, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin approved the establishment of the Suicide Prevention and Response Independent Review Committee, which made 127 recommendations of near and long-term solutions to address suicides in the ranks. The independent panel recommended the department implement a series of gun safety measures to reduce suicides in the force, including waiting periods for the purchase of firearms and ammunition by service members on military property. The panel said the department should also raise the minimum age to 25 for service members to buy guns and ammunition, and should require anyone living in military housing to register privately owned firearms. In addition, the panel said the department should restrict the possession and storage of privately owned firearms in military barracks and dormitories. Austin released a memo September 2023 outlining more than 100 recommendations to be implemented by 2030 to address the suicide crisis in the military. Some of the recommendations included expanding telehealth services, increasing appointment availability by revising the mental health staff model, launching a comprehensive public education campaign on firearm safety, and updating the amount of suicide prevention training. The department chose not to implement the firearm changes at the time. The bulk of our efforts get at secure storage of their firearms, particularly giving service members more options, said Timothy Hoyt, Deputy Director of the Pentagon's Force Resiliency Office. We feel that focusing on secure storage strikes a better balance between what might have been recommended and taking into account that firearms are the tools of military training. The Pentagon in 2024 completed 20 of the 83 recommendations by the commission. Austin said in a prepared statement issued Thursday that the Pentagon will make an unprecedented investment in suicide prevention. Hoyt said the budget for 2025 is projected to be about $250 million for initiatives. We are dedicated to fighting for our service members by fostering supportive team cultures and tackling the stigma of asking for help and other barriers to care. There's still much more work to do, and we won't let up, Austin said. The 2023 suicide report also included data about military family suicides for 2022. The data shows fewer family members died by suicide in 2022 than the previous year, a 9% decrease. While there are far fewer male spouses, they make up nearly half of the suicide deaths. In addition, the military services are hiring personnel to staff prevention programs, and about 1,000 professionals have been hired with a goal of 2,500 by 2028. The National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is available by calling or texting 988. There's also an online chat at 988-LIFELINE. That's kind of all one word, no spaces, LIFELINE.org. That's military suicide's increase among active duty and reserve troops in 2023. I'm going to turn now to one of our veteran service organizations, the American Legion, who sends out this information from the 15th of November. Veterans Documentary aims to change narrative on Vietnam War. This is by Matt Grills, Honor and Remembrance. Film focuses on information, lessons learned from those who served, want Americans to know. A group of Atlanta veterans has produced a documentary film to counter what it calls decades of misinformation about U.S. involvement in Vietnam. Featuring commentary by historians and those who served, Truths and Myths of the Vietnam War examines the treatment of returning veterans, media influence, the anti-war movement, and humanitarian acts by U.S. troops, and challenges the predominant view that the war was unwinnable. None of us had any experience making a film, writing a script, or any of this, says Jim Dixon, Secretary of the Atlanta Vietnam Veterans Business Association, the AVVBA Foundation, and a member of American Legion Post 201 in Alpharetta, Georgia. It was something we believed in strongly, though, and put our hearts into. We'd seen things written about the Vietnam War in movies and so forth and thought, gee, that isn't really the way it was. We knew there was a strong need for it. On March the 29th, National Vietnam War Veterans Day, the documentary was screened at the National Infantry Museum in Columbus, Georgia. Truth and Myths of the Vietnam War is also aired twice on public television in Georgia and once in South Carolina, boosting AVVBA's hopes to get it on the air in every state. The biggest audience, however, has been online, where the 47-minute film can be watched or downloaded at AVVBA's YouTube channel, which you can find by going to www.youtube.com and searching for AVVBA. So far, it's topped 477,000 views and received nearly 1,600 comments, mostly positive. I would say the primary response we've been getting is, thank you, said David Naglin, the Emmy Award-winning filmmaker who steered Truth and Myths of the Vietnam War from paper to screen. Among the emails he's received are messages from sons and daughters of Vietnam veterans who saw their dad suffer because of the scarlet letter imprinted on them due to their service, and widows wanting to thank Naglin and the film team for presenting a different narrative, something you don't hear about or read about in school. Approached by Dixon and his team in 2022, Naglin saw an opportunity to help the veterans refute what they see as lies and distortions in popular films and books. I really believe in presenting historic truth and presenting voices that have been suppressed, and so this, for me, kind of became a passion project, he says. Actor Sam Elliott introduces the film, noting that we owe it to these veterans to listen to what they have to say about the war they served in. About 2.7 million Americans during 16 years of U.S. involvement in Southeast Asia. More than 58,000 were killed and some 300,000 were wounded. Roughly 3 in 10 Vietnam veterans are living today, the last of a generation of warriors that President Ronald Reagan in 1981 said fought as bravely and as well as any Americans in our history. They came home without a victory, not because they'd been defeated, but because they'd been denied permission to win. James Robbins, Dean of Academics at the Institute of World Politics and author of This Time We Win, Revisiting the Tet Offensive, said Reagan's words reflect the feelings of most Vietnam veterans, nearly 90% of whom say they're proud of their service, yet they're concerned that much of what has been reported or presented in films and schools and universities about the war is neither factual nor complete, he says. Rarely mentioned are the unprecedented humanitarian acts by U.S. troops, according to retired Army Major General Patrick Brady, who received the Medal of Honor in 1969 for risking his life to evacuate 51 seriously wounded men in four separate missions and using three different UH-1H helicopters. As an example, he points to the 54th Medical Detachment, a helicopter ambulance unit that evacuated 21,435 patients, including 8,904 civilians and 531 enemy soldiers in a period of 10 months. Beyond that, between 1964 and 1970, civilian action missions by the 5th Special Forces Group alone built 1,003 schools, 398 medical clinics, 6,436 wells, 1,939 kilometers of road, 670 bridges, and 129 churches. I've often said humanitarianism was our great victory in that war, Brady says. Yet returning U.S. troops were, in some places, vilified. A Marine Corps veteran recalls landing in California and being pelted by garbage and feces thrown from a hippie bus. A former Army captain describes being surrounded in San Francisco terminal by a group of six or seven men yelling insults. One stood a foot from him and spat on his chest. "People would look at you, but they wouldn't make eye contact with you," said Army veteran Brian Tate about his arrival at Chicago O'Hare. "If you were walking down the ramp of the hallway, they'd get way over to one side. You felt like a stranger. Here, you're so glad to be back in the U.S., and yet it was extremely uncomfortable with the chilly reception." Truths and Myths also looks at the war's political front. Where the North Vietnamese could not or did not win on the battlefield, they sought victory through propaganda. This, combined with Soviet and U.S. Communist Party funding of anti-war organizations at home, had an outsized effect on Congress and media coverage. Finally, the documentary argues that the Vietnam War could have been won at several points, using sensible strategies, saving thousands of lives. Rather than employing forceful measures at the outset, the Johnson administration chose a policy of gradual escalation, strongly opposed by military leadership. In addition, U.S. troops had to fight under highly restrictive rules of engagement, protecting civilian lives, but leading to more American casualties. The success of Operations Linebacker 1 and 2 in 1972 brought North Vietnam to the peace table, but Congress soon sharply reduced funding for South Vietnam. Meanwhile, China and the Soviet Union had increased their support for North Vietnam by 50% between 1973 and 1975, and the North invaded the South again in violation of the treaty. What followed was a massive wave of refugees fleeing the country, many perishing at sea. Hundreds of thousands of others were murdered, executed, or starved. More people died in the decade after the communist takeover than in the previous 20 years of war, says Leonard Scruggs, author of Lessons from the Vietnam War, Truths the Media Never Told You. The team behind Truths and Myths wants this information to contribute to and perhaps even reshape public perception of the war and why Americans fought. I think this film will stand the test of time and hopefully, slowly, make an impact, Naglieri says. Dixon adds, "We often hear that this is something that's long overdue. We don't want to make one penny on it. We consider the film our endearing legacy for future generations." He adds, "This isn't about what we each did. This is about what we all did and try to tell that there was a purpose to our service and that it was for a noble cause and important cause." That's Veterans Documentary Aims to Change Narrative on Vietnam War. And once again, if you're interested in seeing this, you can go on YouTube and search for the AVVBA documentary, and I'm sure that you'll be able to find and view this if you're interested. Well, let's return to Stripes.com, the official website of the Stars and Stripes newspaper, by this article by Linda F. Hershey, "Sweeping Bill to Expand Veteran Healthcare Outside VA Passes House." This from the 19th of November. Washington. The House passed a sweeping package of measures Monday to expand and strengthen private sector medical care outside the Department of Veterans Affairs. The package will increase coverage for in-home care of disabled and aging veterans, fund mental health counseling for home-based caregivers, and better integrate information on private clinicians in the VA's computer system to facilitate appointments and sharing patient records. The measures, which have not been taken up by the Senate, also extend a training program that prepares veterans for technology jobs and increases transportation assistance for homeless veterans headed to appointments with doctors or to job interviews. The omnibus package, known as the Senator Elizabeth Dole 21st Century Veterans Healthcare and Benefits Improvement Act, was approved 389-9 with support fairly even along party lines. Nine Republican lawmakers cast the dissenting votes opposing the package were Representative Jeff Duncan of South Carolina, Bob Good of Virginia, Paul Gosar of Arizona, Matt Rosendale of Montana, Keith Self of Texas, Joshua Brachin of Oklahoma, Eli Crane of Arizona, Ralph Norman of South Carolina, and Chip Roy of Texas. This bill will change the landscape for elderly veterans and give them a choice about where they live out their sunset years, Representative Mike Boss, Republican of Illinois, chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, said prior to the vote. Representative Mark Decano, Democrat of California, ranking member of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, described the final package as a compromise negotiated last week to increase community-based health care while preserving VA health services. "I'm glad we've gotten here and put our veterans and the people first. The American people want to see more of this happening," Decano said. The legislation increases the reimbursement rate for caregivers who help aging and disabled veterans continue to live at home as an alternative to nursing homes. It allows for 100% coverage for the home-based care, which is on par with the rate that VA nursing homes receive. Current law allows for 65% coverage of the cost for in-home care. The legislation also enables the families of veterans who choose to die at home to receive burial and funeral allowances that currently are limited to the families of veterans who die at VA facilities. The legislation also seeks to cover transportation costs via ambulance to the nearest non-VA hospital in the event of an emergency. Veterans in rural areas often have quicker access to private community hospitals that are not part of the VA health system, supporters said. The package contains measures for improving the VA's mobile mammography and breast screening services for veterans who may live in rural areas and not have easy access to a VA hospital or clinic. It will also require VA medical centers to ensure that veterans are made aware of private healthcare services in their own communities when similar care is not available in a timely manner at VA hospitals and clinics. Another provision mandates training for all new VA employees on how to report concerns about wrongdoing to the VA Office of Inspector General. The legislation will also require VA to audit in-house police forces and report on security weaknesses at its hospitals and clinics. And that sweeping bill to expand veteran health care outside VA passes House. Next, from Stars and Stripes, we have an article, "Our Veterans Deserve the Best. Lawmakers Urge Army to Restore Horse-Drawn Funerals at Arlington." This is by Linda F. Hershey of Stars and Stripes from the 13th of November. Washington. The return of military horses that have escorted caskets to grave sites at Arlington National Cemetery for more than 75 years will depend on the Army securing adequate pasture land, repairing rundown stables, and improving training for handlers, officials said. Unsanitary living conditions and a lack of open space for the herd to graze led to an indefinite suspension of the 3rd Infantry Regiment Quezon Platoon in May 2023 after several horses died. Major General Trevor Bredenkamp, commander of Army Military District of Washington, said Wednesday at a hearing of the House Veterans Affairs Committee's subpanel on disability and memorial affairs. Lawmakers sought an update on the Army's work to improve the care for the horses and develop a plan for the resumption of horse-drawn funerals at Arlington. Quezon pulling military horses were dying in 2022 because of the Army's failure to provide proper food, veterinary care, pasture land, and stables for the herd, said Representative Morgan Luttrell, Republican of Texas, chairman of the subcommittee. Our Quezon platoon should be the most elite organization of its kind on the planet. Known as the Old Guard, the Quezon platoon of the 3rd Infantry Regiment has carried the caskets of deceased service members to grave sites at Arlington since 1948. The caisson, a ceremonial wagon that bears the casket, is drawn by 4 specially trained horses. The processions are considered an integral part of the traditional full-honor military funerals at Arlington. The Army has given us no estimate on a time or date when these operations will resume, Luttrell said. An Army investigation in 2023 revealed the horses were kept in cramped quarters with a lack of maintenance or care. The herd was grazing on land with construction debris and manure. Horses were consuming low-quality feed and suffering from parasites, according to the findings. Sand and gravel were found in the digestive tracts of 2 horses that died. The problems evolved over time, said Bredenkamp, who also commands the Joint Task Force National Capital Region. They included stables in disrepair, lack of open land to exercise and graze the horses, and handlers with little or no training in working with horses. After decades of neglect, the platoon was taken out of commission, and rightfully so. But families deserve to know that the Army is working diligently to returning the platoon to its rightful stature, said Representative Chris Pappas of New Hampshire, the top Democrat on the subcommittee. 34 families are now waiting for the return of the horse platoon to honor a deceased military member or veteran with full honors at Arlington, Bredenkamp said. More than 2,000 veterans have been denied the benefit of the iconic procession since the service was canceled, he said. The Army Military District of Washington is responsible for military funerals with full honors to the nation's veterans. The herd size and its health directly relate to the wait time for families seeking to have the horse-drawn wagons and funeral processions of loved ones, Bredenkamp said. The Army is now focusing on land acquisition, horse fitness, and talent management. Plans are to secure 100 acres for permanent stables with pasture for grazing and housing for staff, he said. About 40 horses have been retired since 2023 because of age, medical conditions, or both, Bredenkamp said. The Army might seek to change regulations to allow soldiers to stay in the caisson longer than a 2 or 3 year assignment to develop and use their horsemanship skills, he said. The service is also identifying a larger pool of equine veterinarians who can treat the herd. Though the horses have been stabled at Joint Base Meyer-Henderson Hall in Virginia for more than 70 years, there's no open pasture land left in the area, Bredenkamp said. Plans are to update stables at Fort Myer, which is next to Arlington, to use the paddocks when horses are working at funeral processions. But the herd will be kept at a larger permanent facility with pasture land, he said. The renovations at Fort Myer will include improved ventilation at the barns, enlarged stalls, and replacement of flooring to reduce the strain on the horses. Too many of our nation's heroes have not been able to receive the full military funeral honors they've earned due to the Army's years-long mismanagement of the Quezon Platoon military horses, Representative Mike Bost, Republican of Illinois, chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, said in August. A haphazard and ineffective approach to improving the health and living conditions for the herd led to the deaths of the military horses, he said. Bosted asked for quarterly briefings about improvements underway for the Quezon Platoon program until it is fully operational. The Army plans to have a herd of 80 horses to support funeral processions, Bradenkamp said. The service intends to resume operations when it can support 20 funerals per week, he said. The Army has hired a herd manager and facilities manager, improved the diet of the horses, and is using 10 acres temporarily in Virginia to graze and exercise them until a permanent facility is acquired. The Army is unwavering in its commitment to continue this solemn duty for those eligible and rendering honors to those who have served our nation, Bradenkamp said. The horse-drawn caisson funeral procession is one of the most recognized traditions in the military. Representative Juan Ciscomani, Republican of Arizona, said millions of dollars already have been spent to improve the program with poor results, including money paid to an instructor who harmed the horses. What changes is the Army doing to obtain mission-ready horses and take care of them, he asked. Working with the equine community, the Army is rebuilding its knowledge about caring for horses and reaching out to breeders who train horses that pull wagons. We're seeking horses with the right temperament that can work on a horse hitch team, Bradenkamp said. The Army is also raising awareness among the troops about opportunities to work with and train the horses. Quezon operations require specialized skills in handling the horses and conducting ceremonial duties. To meet these needs, we're actively recruiting soldiers interested in equine work and providing them with the necessary training to become proficient in quezon operations, Bradenkamp said. The Old Guard and the equine community are working together to support upgrades and living conditions for the horses, Julie Broadway, president of the American Horse Council, said in a written statement prior to the hearing Wednesday. She said the Army has also pledged to improve the skills of those entrusted with the care and safekeeping of these emblematic horses. Management of the caisson herd on this historic military installation had deteriorated over the years. Frequent turnover among the horses' caregivers, an inevitable result of deployments and reassignments, left gaps in knowledge and experience. Moreover, the equipment and saddlery were obsolete, she said. The Veterans of Foreign Wars is among the advocacy groups that submitted a written testimony stating support for the return of the horse-drawn funeral processions at Arlington after the conditions improve for the herd's welfare. Retired U.S. Navy Rear Admiral John Kreitz, an equestrian expert, said photos and videos posted online revealed ill-fitting tack and dangerous riding practices that put at risk the safety and welfare of the horses and their handlers. These practices were not with evil intent, but from ignorance and a lack of cognizant oversight, he said. Kreitz said there's been a lack of education on the care required for the horses. He cited costly contracts and the hiring of civilian contractors who lack skills and experience. Bradenkamp was recently assigned oversight of the caisson platoon to address the problems, improve the welfare of the animals, and return the service, Kreitz said. From my first meeting with Major General Bradenkamp, it was apparent that he understood that the caisson platoon's culture needed to change from the top down to resolve these issues, he said. The general came in and has done amazing things to move forward, Luttrell said. Soldiers of the Old Guard will now undergo a 12-week basic rider course. Old saddles and other equipment will be replaced. The caisson wagon has also been redesigned to make it easier to maneuver. Our veterans deserve the best, Luttrell said. It's by far past time for the Army to make this a priority again. And that's Our Veterans Deserve the Best. Lawmakers urge Army to restore horse-drawn funerals at Arlington. You're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. I'd like to remind you that you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming streaming on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org. And you can also listen by downloading the Sun Sounds of Arizona app from the Apple App Store for your iPhone or iPad or the Google Play Store for your Android tablet or phone. We turn now to taskandpurpose.com, another military news website, for this rather disturbing headline: Veterans Affairs police officer sentenced to prison after beating man at hospital. Juan Anthony Carrillo was a police officer with the Department of Veterans Affairs when he struck a man 45 times with his baton. This is by Jeff Shogel. A former police officer with the Department of Veterans Affairs has been sentenced to 1 year in federal prison for striking a homeless man with his baton roughly 45 times within a minute at the West Los Angeles VA Medical Center in California, the Justice Department announced. "These actions are unacceptable and are not tolerated at VA," said VA Press Secretary Terrence Hayes at a statement to Task and Purpose. "We cooperated with the investigation every step of the way, immediately removed this officer from his position when the investigation began, and this police officer has now been fired. We will continue to take steps to ensure that all VA police officers and all VA employees are creating a safe and welcoming environment at all VA facilities, and we will hold them accountable when they fail to do so." Juan Anthony Carrillo, 46, pleaded guilty in July to one misdemeanor count of deprivation of rights for using excessive force, a November 15th Justice Department news release says. Carrillo received the maximum possible penalty for the offense. The incident took place on January 16, 2022, at approximately 4 a.m. on the grounds of the VA clinic when Carrillo assisted another Veterans Affairs Police Department police officer, the news release says. Carrillo hit a 34-year-old unarmed man identified in court records as R.V. with his VA-issued baton approximately 45 times in about 41 seconds, the news release says. For most, if not the entire altercation, the other VA police officer was on top of RV. During the attack, there were moments where RV was subdued or even still, according to a November 1st sentencing memorandum filed by the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Central District of California. But because defendant strikes were relentless, averaging more than one strike per second, RV would start moving his legs again away from the pain, all while defendant continued to beat RV's legs. As a result, defendant RV and the other VA officer made a 180-degree half circle on the ground. RV was 60 pounds lighter than Carrillo and 85 pounds lighter than the other officer, according to the Justice Department news release. He suffered a broken bone of his right foot, among other injuries. Prosecutors described RV as unhoused and struggling with mental illness and a possible drug addiction, according to the sentencing memorandum. The VA has its own police department, which is tasked with protecting medical centers and other facilities operated by the Department of Veterans Affairs. Their primary role is to deter and investigate crimes that may have happened within the legal authority of the VA. A Veterans Affairs Police Department lieutenant later determined that Carrillo's use of force was not reasonable and violated department policy, rules, and regulations, in part because RV was only offering defensive resistance, the sentencing memorandum says. This might be a far different case if the defendant had ceased his strikes after the first 10, first 15, possibly even the first 20 strikes, the sentencing memorandum says. But to continue beating another human being who was curled on the floor, pinned under the weight of another 250-pound officer, no less, even as RV screamed in pain, even as the backup officers arrived, and even as RV laid perfectly still, is chilling behavior. In seeking a one-year prison term for Carrillo, prosecutors noted that he was forced to resign from the Los Angeles Police Department after a 2004 incident in which he was accused of groping a woman, threatening to shoot another woman, and punching the second woman in the mouth. But in an October 30th court filing, Carrillo's attorney, James R. Tedford II, asked the judge to sentence his client to time served and supervised release, arguing that it took five VA police officers to subdue RV, who later tested positive for methamphetamines. On the day of the altercation, RV was resisting arrest and had been struggling with another VA police officer for about a minute by the time Carrillo arrived at the scene, Tedford wrote. The January 2022 altercation marked the second time that RV had clashed with VA police officers, Tedford wrote. In July 2021, RV got into a fight with several VA police officers after refusing verbal commands, Tedford wrote. Three VA police officers were injured in the earlier incident, including one who suffered an aneurysm. As a result of the July 2021 fight, VA police officers had been instructed to use their batons in such situations instead of wrestling a suspect to the ground to avoid police officers getting injured, Tedford wrote. Tedford also wrote that Carrillo is a Marine veteran who served as a military police officer for 3 years and presidential support specialist for another 3 years, during which he was a team leader with Marine Helicopter Squadron 1, which transports the president and cabinet members. After leaving active duty, Carrillo was involuntarily recalled to the Marines in March 2003 for 6 months to support U.S. military operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now that he's entered a guilty plea, Carrillo has agreed to never work as a local, state, or federal police officer again, and he's not allowed to take a job that requires him to carry a firearm, Tedford wrote. That's Veterans Affairs police officer sentenced to prison after beating man at hospital. We have another item from Task and Purpose. The Army built a giant concrete pyramid in North Dakota and only used it for 6 months. In the middle of the Great Plains sits a massive cement pyramid surrounded by farmland and a nearby town with about 30 people. But over 6 months in the 1970s, it helped end the Cold War. This is from the 20th of November by Joshua Scoveland. Deep in the farmland of North Dakota sits an ominous and massive concrete pyramid with large circles on all four faces. It wasn't built by an ancient civilization or aliens. It was built by the U.S. Army, and it played a pivotal part in the Cold War. The Stanley R. Mickelson Safeguard Complex is located near Nikoma, North Dakota, closer to the Canadian border than to its nearest U.S. city, Grand Forks, which is about 100 miles away. Although the harsh winters make the pyramid look like it's on the Star Wars planet Hoth, it's actually in a town populated with only 30 people, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. It was built in the early 1970s as a central radar and control center for an array of defensive missiles across the prairie that would shoot down incoming Russian nuclear missiles. The pyramid itself cost close to $140 million, or $800 million in today's dollars. The missile system it controlled, known as Safeguard, cost $5.7 billion, or $32 billion today, roughly the cost of three nuclear aircraft carriers. The system was declared fully operational in October 1975. It was shut down in April 1976. Still, the pricey Mickelson Safeguard Complex may have been worth the cost in geopolitical terms. During the 5 years of its construction, the mere threat of the system's eventual capabilities jump-started negotiations between the U.S. and the Soviet Union over limiting systems like Safeguard, a major crack in Cold War arms control. It is believed that the plans for deployment and initiation of construction of this facility were instrumental in obtaining Soviet agreement to the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty and subsequent decline in Cold War hostilities between the superpowers, reads an historic engineering record of the complex compiled in 1996 by the National Park Service. According to the Park Service history, over 1,000 construction workers started building the Safeguard Complex on April 6, 1970. The thick layers of cement and steel enabled it and its towers to withstand a nearby nuclear blast. The MCS was the hub of a system designed to shoot down incoming intercontinental ballistic missiles. The pyramid's radar arrays on its north-facing sides had the capability to detect incoming ICBM missiles several hundred miles out. Crews and computers within the complex would then launch one of the 30 Spartan missiles, or 16 Sprint missiles, which were arrayed across the state to destroy the incoming nuclear warhead. Over the next decade, it was slowly decommissioned and emptied out of anything valuable. Its 16 staircases and support beams were removed to prevent people from climbing the various floors within the pyramid, and all the sensitive equipment and missiles were transported to other bases. Another radar center in the safeguard chain, Cavalier Space Force Station, is still active, but the MCS has long been cold and abandoned. It's also undergone several rounds of costly environmental cleanups, removing millions of gallons of contaminated water from its basement structures. The Army sold the property long ago, and it has changed hands several times. A North Dakota community of Hutterites, an Anabaptist religious branch, whose followers live in largely self-contained communities similar to Mennonite or Amish groups, bought the complex in 2012 for $530,000. Local development officials bought it back in 2017 with hopes of turning it into an industrial site, a plan that seemed to find a taker in 2022 from the complete opposite end of the technology spectrum than the Hutterites, cryptocurrency. In July 2022, Governor Doug Burgum, appointed this month by President-elect Donald Trump to run the Department of the Interior, announced that BitZero Blockchain, Inc. would purchase the whole property to build a secure data center. However, more than 2 years later, there's very little evidence that BitZero has made any progress at the site. Calls by task and purpose to numbers associated with BitZero's headquarters in Canada were not returned. State officials have made no further announcements about the site, but told North Dakota media that state funds promised for the site had so far not been used. That's the Army built a giant concrete pyramid in North Dakota and only used it for 6 months. Next, we'll turn to our news.va.gov website. We have this news. Win a brand new Toyota from Hiring Our Heroes, and it's got a wonderful picture here of a little crew cab Toyota Tacoma pickup. Looks very slick, all olive drab. This is from the 19th of November by Brooke Prouty, Hiring Our Heroes, U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation. Disclaimer, the sharing of any non-VA information does not constitute an endorsement of products and services on the part of the VA. Hiring Our Heroes is saying thank you to America's military by giving away a new Toyota to one lucky active duty service member, veteran, or military spouse. The annual Hiring Our Heroes Committed to America's Heroes sweepstakes is currently underway through December 1st, 2024, and there's no cost to enter. The 2023 winner, Air Force veteran Christina Sheets, never expected to win a 2024 Toyota Camry XSE when she read about the contest in a VA newsletter. But this April, she became the latest contest winner, accepting her new car at a Toyota dealership near her home in Washington. Eligible contestants must be legal residents of and currently reside in the contiguous United States. Must be individuals serving or have served in the active duty, National Guard or Reserve components of the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, or Coast Guard, and if discharged or released, have an honorable discharge or are currently married to a current member of the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, or Coast Guard, or their National Guard or Reserve components. You have to have a valid driver's license, and the contest ends at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on December the 1st, 2024. The rest of the sweepstakes rules can be found online. And the easiest way to enter this is to go to news.va.gov and search for hashtag vet resources, one word, or type in vets experience, and it will take you to this news page with the click to enter button. The alternative is to go to the Hiring Our Heroes page, which is www.hiringourheroes, that's all one word, hiringourheroes.org/committed-sweepstakes. And on that page, you'll find the entry form where you put in your information to actually enter the contest. And that article was Win a Brand New Toyota from Hiring Our Heroes. Well, it's time again. Now is the perfect time to try to stop smoking again. Most veterans are able to quit smoking for good. This is from the 20th of November by Dr. Dana E. Christofferson, Deputy Director, Tobacco Use Treatment Program. The Great American Smokeout, November the 21st. Most people who try to stop smoking aren't successful on their first try, but there's no need for them to feel discouraged. Instead, they can think of it as practice, teaching them skills and strategies they can apply to their next try. Veterans who smoke also should be aware that VA has more tobacco use treatment options available to veterans enrolled in VA care than ever before. That's why, for the Great American Smokeout, November the 21st, VA is letting veterans know that practice is perfect. Every attempt is a step in the right direction. For example, veterans may learn more about specific strategies they can use to cope with cravings to smoke, as well as what types of support and treatment are most helpful. In 2023, 77% of veterans who'd ever smoked reported that they had successfully stopped smoking for good. More than 100,000 veterans were able to stop smoking in 2023 alone, according to the VA survey of veteran enrollees' health and use of health care. Start experiencing the benefits. People who stop smoking start reaping benefits immediately, and they experience many more benefits over the long term. Within 2 weeks of stopping, they may find they can breathe easier when doing everyday tasks like walking up the stairs. Their senses of taste and smell also may improve. A year after stopping smoking, the risk of heart attack drops sharply. After 5 to 10 years, the risk of cancers of the mouth, throat, esophagus, lungs, and bladder are cut in half. Stopping smoking also can improve sleep, boost the effectiveness of some anxiety and depression medications, alleviate some post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, reduce chronic pain, and provide many more benefits. Find treatments at work. The truth is that stopping smoking isn't easy. Nicotine withdrawal can start within a few hours of someone smoking their last cigarette. But VA provides many types of treatment and support to help veterans manage withdrawal and overcome other obstacles. These options include prescription medications, nicotine replacement therapy such as the nicotine patch or gum, and in-person and virtual counseling. Research has shown that people who smoke have the best chance at stopping tobacco use for good with a combination approach of cessation medication and behavioral counseling. Options for getting started. Connect with your VA healthcare provider through MyHealthyVet or other channels to discuss new therapies or a combination of treatments that may work best for you. Call Quit VA, VA's free telephone quit line, at 1-855-QUIT-VET, and that's 1-855-784-8838. To talk with a trained QUIT coach and develop a plan to stop smoking. Coaches offer support in English and Spanish. Sign up for Smoke-Free Vet by texting VET to 47848 or VETESP to 47846 for support in Spanish. Veterans will receive tools, tips, and text messages of encouragement and support. Visit Smoke Free Vet's website to build a quit plan. Anytime is the right time to stop smoking, whether it's the first try or the fifth. Learn more about VA tobacco use treatment resources and how veterans can access them. And that's Now is the Perfect Time to Try to Stop Smoking Again, Great American Smokeout, November 21st. The last item from news.va.gov, Musicians on Call, free concert for veterans. This is from the 20th of November by Abby Tandler, Program Coordinator, Musicians on Call. And again, the sharing of any non-VA information does not constitute an endorsement of products and services on the part of the VA. At Musicians on Call, or MOC, every day is Veterans Day. Since 2009, MOC has been bringing the healing power of live and recorded music to VA healthcare facilities across the country. Through its unique programs, Musicians On Call uses volunteer guides and musicians to share their talents virtually and in person. They use music as a universal language to bring joy, comfort, and hope to veteran patients, their family members, and caregivers during their hospital experiences. To date, MOC volunteers have performed for more than 100,000 hospitalized veterans all over the country. Laying in the VA hospital was feeling so bleak and so alone. Enter two folks from Musicians On Call, and the fog lifted. Music was fine. It was the enthusiasm and the joy with which we were serenaded. "Thank you so very much," said one veteran at the West Roxbury VA Medical Center in Boston. This year, Musicians On Call is once again hosting Concert for Veterans, a special virtual concert that bridges the gap between hospital walls and our nation's celebration of Veterans Day. Hosted by Purple Heart recipient, Army veteran, and Black River recording artist Scotty Hasting, the event will feature heartfelt messages of gratitude from popular artists and curated performances from the Grand Ole Opry stage. Tune in to see country music favorites like Craig Morgan, Scotty McCreery, Sarah Evans, Dustin Lynch, Bellamy Brothers, and more. This concert will be available to stream through November 25th, 2024. You can click on the button on this webpage to watch the concert and use the passcode VETERAN. Share your feedback of your experience. I appreciate all the performers sharing songs with veterans. They are loving, caring people. Thank you so much. I am a disabled veteran at Prescott Valley VA Hospital. MOC is a great program. Thank you all for sharing time, energy, and love with others. Shared a veteran patient at Prescott Valley VA in Arizona. That show is available by clicking on the link at news.va.gov. You need to search for hashtag vet resources or vets experience. The website itself for the concert is connect.musiciansoncall. That's all one word, musiciansoncall.org/programs/veterans24. And that article was Musicians On Call Free Concert for Veterans. I'd like to thank you for joining me for this week's edition of Weekly Reveille. And remember, you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming streaming on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org. Here you can find the live stream for Sun Sounds, or you can select individual programming to listen to at a time of your choosing. Streaming is also available on your Amazon Echo or Dot device. This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman.